As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm here with Ben and Matt. How you guys doing?
Yo, yo.
We're doing all right.
Not too bad. Just Lenten.
Lenten.
Just Lenten.
Yes.
As we say Lenten. In Indiana.
We're doing our Lenten Lenting.
I mean, don't you kind of feel like since, you know, March 15 of last year, I've been Lenting? It's the most Lentiest Lent we've ever had.
This is the Lentiest. It was the Adventiest Advent we ever Advented, and now this does feel... Like since last, I can't remember when Lent started last year. Were we already in Lent when this?
We were already in for a while, at least for part of it.
For a couple of weeks, anyway. So this does feel like a Lentier Lent because last Lent, I just put on social media the other day. It was like it's almost the 1 year anniversary of. I think we might have to cancel in person worship for a couple of weeks.
Right?
Little did we know. But yeah, that's coming up, isn't it? Like this podcast is releasing March 2nd, which just means that I feel like March 9th, that's in my mind. Was that a Sunday? I feel like it was like right around now that it was like, wait a second, what's happening? We might
For
need
us
to...
in Colorado, it was like March 15th. Yeah. And I truly kind of feel like there needs to be kind of a mourning or a like a
Some
lamenting
sort of
or something of just acknowledging it's been a rough year.
It has been a rough year.
Y'all, it took me an hour to get my son in the shower this week because he finally all of the pain and the loneliness and the frustration and the lack of human connection was more than his little 78-pound body could bear, and he couldn't move his body. Mm. And I sat there with him, and he just named, there's no friends in my class, I don't enjoy school, I don't want to go play outside, because this new friend is mean to me and nobody else. As he just poured it all out, I just thought, man, this is all of us. Like, we're all laying on the ground, not able to get up to go get in the shower. Except as adults, we've got, you know, another cup of coffee or, fear of losing our house to keep us going. but a 12-year-old.
Yeah, that's how it feels, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I think I need to constantly remind myself, this ain't normal. Everybody is freaking out.
Yes.
In their own way. And let's just be patient and kind to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because life is hard enough, as this interview from Gino today
is. Even not in a pandemic, people can have hard times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Gino talks about his personal story, right?
Yes, he does.
And and really kind of describes the spiritual abuse that he has gone through. And I'm thankful that he's able to articulate that and be honest and vulnerable in that, because that's real courage and real bravery for someone to share their story, because other people need to hear it. We need to hear that.
And he does it in such a, and you'll hear some of this in the interview, but like there's like a, I really admire him for doing this. He's part of our team as well. He's our community liaison at Gravity. I really admire him for doing this, because I have tried to talk about experiences of spiritual abuse before, and it's like there's a re-traumatizing kind of feeling, like my heart starts beating really fast, and it feels like you're re-experiencing it. And so I just really admire him and respect him for taking the time to tell this story, because I know how difficult it is for somebody to recount these events. But I'm hoping this story will be really helpful for people who, unfortunately, have very similar experiences. We've heard a lot of these kinds of things, just abuse of power in the church, and how that manifests in the stories. And it can, hearing somebody else talk about it, it just makes you feel a little bit less alone. Like, oh, that maybe I wasn't the problem there. You know, maybe this was bad. Maybe this was as bad as it felt, and that there's nothing wrong with me necessarily. It can be really helpful and encouraging.
Well, let's get into it. Let's hear Gino's story.
All right, here we go.
Hey, Gino, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Hey, Matt, Ben, good to be with you guys.
Hey, good to have you, man.
That's the voice of Gino Curcurudo. He's a church planner, chiropractor, dad of several, husband of one. Gino lives in Philly. He's at a church called The Table, which is also the name of Ben and our church.
Church. No, maybe some relation. Yeah.
No, they're like kissing cousins, you know? Yeah, this church is exactly. Share a lot
and
in common.
And we got... Yeah.
Gino is at The Table, The Table Philly, and he... also has recently taken a position at Gravity. So, Gino, maybe give us any details I left out about your bio there, and maybe tell us a bit about what you do with Gravity.
Yeah, thanks. You guys seem pretty excited to have me on. You're like talking over each other. That's awesome. I love that.
Well, my internet's lagging, so I
could be a delay in the internet.
I might lag over you, too.
So it's not enthusiasm. Good. We got that out of the way.
We're enthusiastic. We're enthusiastic about you, Gino.
Yes. So I'm a pastor, church planner, The Table, Philadelphia, husband to Jill, and father of four, almost all teenagers right now. Mm. And working with Gravity, I'm the community liaison and a coach. So I work with our community to, one, like develop community and get them connected into the resources that might help them, and just listen to where they're at in their lives and their context for ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Maybe tell us a bit, how did you get in contact with Gravity? Where did that initial contact happen?
Man, so it's kind of an interesting story. I mean, it will come up in my story as we talk today, but I met Sternke, I think about 8 years ago. We started doing some training together. We were put into some breakout rooms. He was kind of like my training partner, like training me to train others. Mm. And that was... before there was a Gravity leadership.
Yeah.
I worked with Ben Hardman for a while, and I was in his house, I believe staying with him, doing a training in Ohio when you guys were having calls. He had to excuse himself about forming gravity. And he started telling me about this thing and invited me into it. And I was like, I'm not interested to be a part of anything right now. Cause it's just where I was in my life, nothing against you guys, but where I was. And so, but now how I've recently gotten connected to gravity is going through a cohort and participating in the training and feeling like it really changed my life in a lot of ways. And some of my story is reflected in how this has changed my life. Or at least I'd say that some of the problems, the challenges that I've come up and how I understand leadership, how I deal with power, how I relate to it personally and try to use it in my life in all relationships was really affected by going through this cohort. Because I had a lot of questions and a lot of frustration about how to inhabit spaces I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So we are doing the series on power, and we're focusing on race and gender in the church, primarily focusing on non-white, non-male voices. But Gino, you're as white as they come, and you also are as male as they come. But you've had, we wanted you to have you on the podcast to tell a bit of your story about how you've experienced power in the church over the last several decades as a participant and also as a leader. So where do you want to start? How do you want to kick us off?
Whew. Well, I mean, I think that's a good question. I'm not really sure. The story's really long because it's, you know, a lifelong experience and I'm getting older every single day. But I think specifically where I had an awakening to how power is used in the church was just in a really negative experience. I was extremely, extremely naive. My wife and I didn't grow up in the church. We came to faith after we got married. We've been married 20 years. And we, after about, I'd say about 6 or 7 years in this church, we had a desire to plant a church and to move into Philadelphia to do that. And we were sent by our church to consider doing that. We ended up partnering with a church in Philadelphia for some training. And that in that environment, I was quickly received in and welcomed as someone who had, you know, some training, some experience, and could be a help. And moved within the first year and a half into being a pastor, another elder there in this kind of independent church that was affiliated with different church planting organizations. So what I want to name for myself is I had a desire to learn. I had a desire to be a part of something. Yeah. I had a desire to fit in. Mm. And I had some skills, but I didn't have a pedigree in the church. You know, I didn't know church politics. I didn't know church polity specifically. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I can keep talking, but I think I wonder if there's a question there. Yeah.
I wonder too. as you're talking, Gino, I think this aligns closely, I think, with a lot of my story. I came to faith later in college, having grown up in the church, but not really having taken ownership of that personally. You know, it was more of a cultural family thing. And then I really owned it personally and began to be on the lookout for people who seemed like they were confident and competent. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows how to do this Christian thing well? And I fell in with a band of people that did not lack for confidence and seemed competent about what they were confident in. And it sounds like very similarly. And I was eager to learn too.
Yeah. And, It's hard. I say it's challenging to talk about yourself in such a way, but like when I have a perspective and a way of understanding myself, and one of the things that I've learned from this experience is I'm not like an alpha male guy. I'm not a prototypical tough guy either. I might have an imposing posture and figure, but I'm not that guy. That's not how I was raised. Divorced parents. My mom kind of raised us and instilled a lot of just different values and ways of living in the world. But I'm a loyal person and I quickly trust people. And so when I saw people with confidence and competence, I saw, and learning how to live in the church, I saw that as there's something inherently wrong with me that I need to learn from these people. Because I don't speak with the same kind of confidence. I don't have the same kind of clarity of conviction. I don't speak with the same kind of authority. I'm much more comfortable sitting with people and listening to them rather than telling them what they need to do. And so I thought my training was to toughen up. That's what I needed, because that's what I was being told.
So that wasn't just an internal narrative that you had of like, oh, those people look really confident and they're doing it right. And there's something wrong with me because I'm not like that. I must need to learn from them. But that learning was almost like a shame. There's almost shame in the learning. Like the fact that I need to learn means there's something shameful about me that I'm not the right kind of person. Yeah. But you also said that that was an explicit narrative. It wasn't just internal for you, but you were told you needed to toughen up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. There, I can give you some examples.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'd love to hear
And in hindsight, I go back and see, wow, I know the theology that was at work here. I know the power dynamics that were at work there. But then I had no idea. I just felt
you just sort of took it at face value.
Yeah.
It didn't feel right, but it also was like, well, I guess I need to learn this, or I guess I should toughen up. Yeah.
Yeah. Or that maybe there's something wrong with me. Like I think there's something nice about innocence and feeling like, hey, I'm going to trust someone. I'm going to consent to trusting someone. Yeah. And we're told, oh, you know, a good Christian will seek to just understand and put others in before themselves and consider what they're saying and not be so arrogant. But that can be really quickly, I found out that's a power move.
Yeah.
You can be someone's gaslighting you the entire time, telling you that you're trying to grasp for something and you don't know. So one situation that occurs to me was the guy that I was partnered with in ministry. At one point, we'd worked together. We ended up like moving into a house that he owned three doors down from the church office. So we were intimately involved. Best friends, our families together, working together. And one day, just in a conversation, he had said, I don't know how it started, but he had said to me, I really feel badly for you because you didn't grow up in a Christian home and you didn't have the values instilled in you and you didn't have a father that kind of led you like I did. And I really feel like I can help you with that. And I'm like, I'm a 37-year-old man. Like, what are you saying? and so instead, I didn't erupt, because that would be sometimes my tendency would be like, what the heck? I just said, hey, I don't make any apologies for my story. I'm grateful for my story. I appreciate your concern, but I think that my story is the one that I'm learning to follow Jesus in, and I think it has value. I feel like it has value. I don't think that there's a hierarchy of stories. And I feel like in hindsight, I rejected his like gaslighting, and then the game was afoot.
Okay, so
the game was afoot. That's a funny way to put it, man.
Oh man. So, I mean, when you're a leader, people let you do what they want, and he moved on you like a dad, is what you're saying.
He totally did. He totally did.
Let the hearer understand.
He saw a person who had probably some dad issues and went into that.
Yeah. So maybe like, I know we throw terms around like gaslighting all the time, but maybe not everybody's familiar with what you're talking about. How is what he said to you? Because I could imagine some people hearing that and thinking, oh man, I'd love if somebody would do that for me, or I'd love if somebody cared for me in that way. Like it could sound caring and sound like something that, you know, might be welcomed in some people's lives. So why was it, what is gaslighting and why is that gaslighting? Why was that gaslighting for you?
I'm not an expert, but I would say that someone repeatedly telling you things about yourself so that you would believe that's the narrative of your life or that's what you're experiencing, even if it's not what you're experiencing, is a form of gaslighting.
Yes.
And I mean, I know the origin from the play and all of that that we could talk about.
Right. But, it's obscure. I can't even remember what it is. But yeah, the term has come to mean like when someone is sort of feeding you a narrative that isn't your experience, but trying to convince you that it is your experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that story, and I do empathize with people who could see that, receive that offer as a welcome, but I would suggest that could that offer come with a, hey, how do you feel about this? What are you desiring?
Right.
Rather than imposing, here's what you need.
Yes.
And so that behavior became the norm in that environment, and I started picking up on it. So things started to escalate around a few things, and I'll just, because I don't want to take too much time on the story. I want to talk about the learnings, but there's important pieces here.
There was
an event that happened where he called all the men in the church together to have a men's meeting about some issues that were in the church, and I organized it at his request. Brought all my friends in there, and it turned into I don't know how long it was, maybe 35, 40 minutes, basically of a locker room, pep talk kind of rally, criticizing the men for not knowing their place and for being soft and not being obedient. And it was really uncomfortable as I had to stand beside him as he did this and then say, do you have anything to say? And I was like, I'm not sure we should be here. I think that's what I said. So
did you say that up front to all the men?
I think I did. I was like, I think you've said enough. And I got some people talking to me, and it was obvious that there was a division among the two leaders.
Okay.
And so my job was
you and the other guy.
Yeah. It was my job to manage that and start seeing that. And people would start coming to me and say, I've experienced him like this. What can you do about that? And I'd say, you need to talk to him. But I also started gathering all this information. There was also financial issues because we were raising support together, and I had talked to him about hey, we're struggling financially.
Right.
Because we haven't gotten all these things in order. I'm not sure if there's something wrong, but I just came to him, hey, let's figure this out together. Mm-hmm. And we made this commitment to do that. Well, it never happened. And it turned into us not being able to pay some of our bills, not having money.
Yeah.
And I had my own practice that I was working less time because I was giving more time to the church. I could go back and work. That wasn't the issue. I wasn't asking for something that we couldn't have. I was saying, are we going to do this? But that couple months where our finances were a difficulty and I started asking questions about the finances of the church was when things really turned. So it went to money. And maybe now I had something on him. I wasn't thinking that, but I could expose something because I was called into a meeting with him where he told me I needed to step down because I wasn't financially sound. I had gotten into an argument with my wife. We got into a pretty big fight around the finances. What are we going to do? And she was rightfully concerned. Uh-huh. We came to him about our fight because we're open about these things. Said, hey, we could use some help. And he used that to come back and tell me that there's problems in my marriage. I was not allowed to talk to married people. And I didn't, I had problems with my finances. So I needed to step down as an elder and a pastor. So I needed to lose the job that I had basically also. And I thought, well, this is kind of crazy. This doesn't seem like how it should work.
Yeah.
And that's when all of the stories of everything that he had said was just put in front of me. And I lost it. I lost my cool. I told him that he could have his kingdom and I'm getting out of here. But I didn't I used other words.
Other words. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So wait, when you say then it all came out, What are you referring to? What came out? What did he say? How did that? It sounds like there was a dam that broke open. What was that?
Yeah, that's helpful. Maybe I can go back and clarify. Before there was the telling me that my finances were out of order, I had come to him and said, we have a problem. People are talking to me about how they're experiencing you, and I'm asking them to come to you, and they're not doing it, and I'm concerned about your reputation. And I want to work this through with you as, your partner in this. He received that as me bringing charges against an elder without any witnesses. And then it was really creepy. Hmm. But the whole thing was then it was now a case, building a case against Gino and why he's unqualified.
So people were coming to you and saying, hey, Frank is a real jerkhead. And you're like, okay, well, you should go talk to Frank about him being a jerkhead. And they're like, no, No. I can't do that. And you had a number of these conversations. So you went to Frank and you said, hey, a lot of people think you're a jerkhead, but they won't come talk to you about it. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. And they were scared of him. Right. Exactly.
Well, he sounds like a charming fella.
Yeah.
No. So then that became the issue that you tried to talk to Frank about that.
Yes, exactly.
But that was bringing charges. The way that was framed was that bringing charges against an elder without witnesses.
And so yeah, there were two other elders in the church that weren't staff, and they started having meetings without me and talking about me. They made decisions they brought me in. I didn't know what the meeting was about. They'd tell me, here's the list of things that you've done. You need to repent of all of these, and you need to step down. And I was like, but none of this happened. None of this is actually true. Well, you don't have any conviction. And I thought, well, I'm just questioning whether actually this is real.
Yeah.
Can I point something out here?
Please do.
This is a common tactic of people who demonstrate abusive, toxic leadership, of narcissists, of cult leaders.
Yeah.
They will regularly accuse other people of what they themselves are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that you come to him and you say, hey, I've got an issue. People won't talk to you, and I keep trying to have them talk to you, and I don't know what to do about it. And they interpret that as you bringing a list of charges and accusing them. And then the way they handle it is they bring a list of charges and accuse you.
Yes.
Without any kind of conversation beforehand.
Yes.
So this is a typical pattern of toxic, abusive leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They will blame other people and accuse other people of doing what they're doing.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that then. All I knew was, hey, we're supposed to be honest and open with each other, and we'll work these things through by making space for Jesus to help us discern.
Yeah.
And so it changed my way of, like, being. I think that's the closest I've ever been to, like, a nervous breakdown, because when you're being constantly told that reality as you see it is not reality and you're wrong for that. So when I asked those questions, like, hey, I don't really see that this is what I did, I definitely lost my temper, and I asked for forgiveness for that, and it was extended in front of the witnesses and all that, but it was never recognized. And so what happened next was, because I refused to submit to all of their charges, was the language. There'd be letters dropped in my mailbox, by the way, explaining what I did wrong. It was really creepy. Our entire community was told not to be in relationship with us, so we were shunned by.
Yeah.
And we had, like, started missional communities, multiplied missional communities, had great relationships with our neighbors who became our only friends because they were the only ones that weren't forbidden to spend time with us. And so we're living in isolation in a very tiny church, you know, those are all our relationships. And the whole time I'm thinking, I just got to figure out how I can make this right, because I probably messed up. They're saying all these things. And you're being told, like, hey, how proud are you that you won't listen to people that have walked with you for years?
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you, so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission, and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
And I recognize that feeling, Gino, having had a similar experience. It's really hard to admit that feeling, I find, because there's just so much shame wrapped up in it of just like, am I not even seeing things right?
Yeah.
Or like, did I get taken for a ride here? You know what I mean? Like, you almost feel like you're pot committed, you know? It's like, well, I got to see this through to the end. Otherwise I'm going to look like an idiot.
Well, that was exactly it. Yeah. That was exactly it. It was just like, I don't trust myself enough to think that I should take a hard stance on this. Certainly I can live in humility, and that's all the language that's being used. It's all that language, and
people. It sounds great. It's biblical.
It does.
Yeah.
But there was no solution. I mean, I went to Frank personally at his home, and asked for his forgiveness. We cried together, and he denied that that situation ever happened publicly. So the things things escalated. I asked for mediators.
Can I pause for a second? I want to point out the elements of your story that are common. Mm-hmm. That are common to these stories, because I know people are listening that have Franks in their life. Maybe they are a Frank. This is today's the day of salvation. The other part of what's happening here is that even the things you're saying, Gino, now, Gino 2021, mm-hmm. says them, and they're like, isn't this crazy? But in the moment, you are doubting yourself. You think mm-hmm. you're the crazy one. You think you've done something wrong. I've got to find a way to make sense of this, that what they're saying is true. Mm-hmm. And this is the reality distortion field that we get into when we're with toxic and abusive leaders. They make us doubt our sense that we know what's real and what isn't. And we keep, and what happens is, you mentioned gaslighting earlier. Mm-hmm. I've experienced this, Gino, as I'm gaslighting my own conscience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm telling myself, you must have done something wrong. Yeah. And now you have to take responsibility for these satanic accusations and try to, right? And so you end up gaslighting yourself. You end up sort of traumatizing your own conscience in order to make this abusive, toxic, narcissistic leader narrative fit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't, and this doesn't even address the conversations that are going on between my poor wife, Jill, and my kids, who are trying to understand my daughter, our oldest is 9 or 10 at this time, and saying, how come no one comes over anymore? Like, what's wrong with us? And our explanation is like, well, I just didn't do something right. And they feel like they need to keep me from people until we work that out. And her response is, well, can't you just ask for forgiveness? And you're like, out of the mouths of babes. Oh, I think I've tried that. It doesn't seem to work. You know, there's just all this trauma being trickled down, in a sense, onto other people.
Yeah, totally. Trauma.
Yeah. And so the story goes on. I think that there was, they had decided, because I was, you know, not consenting or not submitting to their needs for me, that they were going to remove me. They're going to do that publicly. And we'd sit in meetings, and they would bring up new charges out of nowhere. And these were some of my closest friends were just on board out of fear. They didn't know how to oppose it.
Yep.
So they called to do this at the end of a public gathering. And the night before that, or the morning of that gathering, I met with them and said, because they had listed, they read me the paper that they're going to read. They're going to read all of these charges because it's going to be emotional for them. And I said, I don't agree with any of these except for the anger thing. I'm still on board with, I lost my temper. I'm totally on board with that. I will name that. Yeah. And I'll name it without saying all the things you did to provoke me to that flipping over tables kind of moment. But I went into their morning prayer and I said, hey, I'd like to demonstrate some unity in this, even in the midst of all of this. And so if you're going to say all of these things, because they had asked me to publicly speak and accept this, that I would, or to repent. And I said, I will stand up in front of the congregation and repent of my anger. I will do that. If that will help us move towards unity, because people are confused, people don't understand, and you're going to list, I'm not going to say, I object to the rest of this. I'm gonna submit to that. So that goes to what you're saying, Matt. It's like, even in the midst of this, I was willing to do something that was just so damaging to me. So they got to that point. There was a lot of there's a lot of talk between them. People didn't want to do it. One of the elders came over to me and said, I have to read this, and I'm refusing to do it because I care about you too much. I was like, you just need to do what you need to do. Like, this is what you need to do. And so they didn't read from the sheet. They, in a moment that was so supposed to crystallize the charges, they just effectively spoke off the cuff.
Interesting.
And started talking about things that weren't on there, that were never brought up.
Oh, new things?
New things. Oh, they gosh. Specifically mentioned issues with my marriage.
Oh, wow.
And so my wife and I are
this
sitting
publicly?
There.
This is publicly?
This is public. Yeah. This is a Sunday okay. worship service. Woohoo, praise the Lord.
Praise God.
And I'm sitting there just crying with my yeah. wife. And no one knows if any of this stuff is true or not. They're just assuming it is. So
yeah,
we were publicly
you're over there crying. Yeah.
publicly shamed. Yep. And it came to the point where Frank says, well, Gina wants to speak to you all and kind of discuss this. They did not mention anger. I should have said that. They named everything from, I don't know, things I did in the 12th grade to whatever. I'm just kidding. That's not true.
Okay. At this point, I believe you.
Right. It felt, right. I was it like, felt
that,
like
wait,
it.
That feels like a joke, but did they? Yeah.
It felt like it, yes. Yeah. And he looked at me and said, like, he's going to come up and you know, talk to you. And I just shook my head and refused because that was the first moment that I felt like the only way to address this evil is to resist it. It's not to play with it. It's not to tinker. It's not to try and overpower it. You just have to resist it. And my resistance will be, I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to speak anymore. I'm not going to stir them up.
I'm not going to cooperate. I'm not going to participate in these shenanigans. Yeah. Mm.
And you can imagine that didn't go very well for me. So,
yeah. No, yeah. But there is a sense, though, in which it seems like you marked it as this watershed moment for you.
Yeah.
Of like, you know what? No.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to cooperate with this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all hell breaks loose after that. But
yes. Yeah. We left. We just had to leave.
Yeah.
We moved out quickly. We just left. We told them we can't do this. This isn't. Yeah. It became so personal that we were under a microscope. My wife's movements and how she would be her facial expressions during a Sunday gathering were analyzed, and then I was given a report. What's wrong with her? I said, this is creepy. We don't. This isn't helpful. And
you were given a report.
Yeah, crazy, I would go into a meeting and they would tell me, what's wrong with your wife? You need to like work with her on this. I'm like, this is just weird. It just got so weird. I mean, as we're talking, things come up and I'm going, wow, yeah. I forgot that happened, you know?
I do want to say this too. It is weird, Gino, but right, I think it's important to name it's more than weird.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because there's... For too long, we haven't spoke plainly and directly about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. For sake of unity or for sake of not wanting to besmirch people's reputations. I mean, Frank is anonymous to everyone who's listening, but it's also wrong. Mm-hmm. It's weird, but it's also wrong.
Yeah.
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 And I think there's people. There are. I know when I've gone through similar stuff like this, I just needed somebody to tell me, hey, what happened to you was wrong.
Yeah.
Because it validated, people saw the hurt and saw the pain. Mm. And it helped me not feel crazy.
Yes. And I didn't get that for a long time. And people to hear that. I want people to hear that. And I want to be someone who's able to say, even if you've done wrong things in the process of being wronged, it was wrong. It was wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not like your anger earned you all this wrongdoing as, you know, retributive punishment or as some sort of weird tit for tat.
Right. It didn't even happen in that sequence, you know?
No. So you get shunned. You can't go anymore. What happens next? Why are you still Christian?
Yeah, that's a really good question, man. Because I think part of it is the biggest reason is because I find Jesus way too compelling to let other people get in the way of how I relate to him. But also I think I was just too naive thinking that, well, this was just a bad experience and I'll learn from it and we'll just keep making disciples because we love Jesus. But it was the unwinding of this over time because, I mean, this still has implications in my life to the day to today because this is not a resolved situation. And that's why I say, like, it's a long story that could go on. But I've gone through and had to go through three different processes of reconciliation, and it hasn't happened. Every time now, the end result is the mediator saying, he's got issues, and until he's ready to start asking for some forgiveness and owning some stuff instead of putting it all on you, this isn't going to happen.
Oh my goodness.
So, so yeah, why am I still following Jesus? I think that I've learned a lot about power dynamics. And I'm not, I want to be very clear and say that I don't believe that God allowed this to happen so that I could learn these things about power dynamics.
Good.
Yeah.
I think that this is an evil that needs to be resisted. And I could have learned these things apart from this story. But God comes behind this story to show me some things that I can learn from. And I started asking the question, here's the question, is I started asking the question is like, what does this say about what we believe about God that we feel like we need to have power over people to accomplish things? And what does it say relatedly when people don't do the things we need them to accomplish and we respond to them with punishment? And what I found,
Could you answer those questions?
I could. I will. Yeah. Yeah. I think that listening to others and to myself, I think that that tells a story about, I think it tells a story about a certain view of God.
Yeah.
I'm like, God's posture towards us is like kind of low key frustrated that we're not, that we've screwed things up. And or he's hovering over us and saying, like, you're gonna mess this up. And so I need to come alongside you and show you a better way. I need to teach you what it's like to have a real Christian family growing up. I need to teach you how to obey for fear of retribution. And we just still can't follow this mythical God. So in the fullness of time, which I think equates to when God has had it up to here with you, he sends Jesus. And Jesus says, like, hey, I'm going to show you how to do this right because I care about you. And I just want to make sure that you know that in my doing it right, you've been doing it wrong for a very long time. Because while I'm going to be merciful now, I am coming back like Mad Max Jesus, you know, kind of.
Right.
And I'm going to come back and I'm just going to slaughter everyone.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Because I'm really, really, as much as I talk about love, I'm really angry.
Yeah.
And retribution will be had, but I'll give you a few chances.
Yeah.
That's what I think the God sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, so what you're saying is you think that there's a theological malformation here, not just a character or a neurological malformation, that we're actually, when people treat each other like this, we're mimicking in some ways a deficient or incomplete theology that gets God wrong, and so then it gets what are humans and how do we treat humans wrong too.
Yes, and more than just a theology, like as something in our head, it becomes a lived reality with our bodies, that we experience a God that wants to get things done through force and threats, or there will be hell to pay, literally in this view. And so we embody a behavior of, well, I got to get people to do things right. And so I need to use whatever force, power, agency I have to get people to obey. Whether that's what is referred to as evangelism or any, I mean, it's the colonial project in Christianity, and they're not separate. Unfortunately, that's our history. And so we can see this. And so I don't want to say too much and say that everyone that experiences this power knows that they're part of this colonial project, but I do see a similarity that we can trace this back to the roots of American Christianity.
Yeah, that's a big statement.
I've been doing a lot of thinking over the last decade.
Yeah, and a lot of reading. I mean, a lot of these things are coming out right now. You know, we're part of this series. We're going to interview Kristen Dumais. Jesus and John Wayne outlines a lot of that history. I know Willie James Jennings. I know you read that, his Christian Imagination and all of that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I think a lot of these, I think for me, the most disturbing part of the revelations and just kind of the seeing the history of all this stuff is how much this isn't just a few bad apples. It's not these outliers. It's not like, but this is baked in. It's endemic.
Yes.
It's it it arises out of a deeply held ideology that we didn't even realize was an ideology. We just thought it was like Christianity. We thought it was just faith. We just thought we just had these assumptions about, you know, what it means to be a man or what it means to have power or what it means to lead, that we didn't even realize we were reading into the text. We were reading into our faith from these other sources.
Yeah. And it's so true, because while I had begun to reject these things theologically, I'm still formed and shaped over years of how I inhabit spaces. And so if God is just like Jesus, then maybe everything changes. But that doesn't mean that I start acting differently right away. That doesn't mean that I start responding differently right away. But maybe I start thinking, so I find Jesus very compelling because he doesn't use his power to get things done. He actually says, come and see, come and follow me, and you'll see the presence of God in ways that you've never expected. You'll see things that you've, and you will see power in a totally different way, one that doesn't use itself to get things over on people, but instead extends itself, like drains itself for the filling of others, this kenotic, cruciform reality. And Jesus offers us participation in that. And I think that maybe the way that, well, I guess I'd say this way. At first, I was really, I'd be very angry about what had happened, and I want to blow things up. But I, you know, and I want to name names, and I wanted, and I realized, like, that is just the same kind of power, just used for my idea of good. And maybe that's helpful for people. I'm not saying I'm not against naming names and doing this thing. We don't have to just be passive. But I'm saying my imagination for using power was just power for my desires. Not making space. And unwinding this structure.
So lobbing accusations against them and hauling them to court.
Yes.
Like they lobbed accusations against you and lobbed and drug you to court. You use the word resist in your story. That you, at one point, you refused to participate in the kangaroo court on Sunday morning, and you just didn't get up and speak. Could you say more about how we embody power as Christians, not passively and also not punitively, but in this posture of resistance?
I think that Willie James Jennings says it best when he describes joy, and he says that joy is an act of resistance against despair and all of its forces. And I think what he means by that is that despair, in all the ways that it wants us to draw us into believing that death is the final reality, not just physical death, but the idea that the things that strangle off life, he says. So violence, debt, war, oppression, and that to find joy is to actively resist that. Not to say that it's not actually happening, but that we resist that. So for me, the act of resistance was to name that this isn't the way things are supposed to be. You're not supposed, if you've, even if you've done all of these things, you're not supposed to be publicly shamed so that you would be restored. That doesn't compute. And say that I'm just not going to participate in that, not because I'm denying that this is actually happening in front of me, but I'm going to resist it by saying, I will not be part of something that causes death.
Yes.
I just won't.
Yes. It reminds me of, I think Dallas Willard used to talk about it like that. Like there's this, like, I can't remember how he named it, but something like that, of this patient, insistent non-participation in evil. I think he just says, like, I just like that, that's resisting evil. You don't, you know, sort of use the power of the ring, to, you know, kill Sauron. You refuse to participate in that kind of power. And you refuse to participate, in those kinds of games. And so yeah. I think there is a beautiful picture there. And it is important, I think, because sometimes our only imagination is, okay, roll over and take it.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, like, or like stand up and fight, you know, and pop the guy in the mouth. You know what I mean? Like those are our only two imaginations. But I think there is this like brilliant, nonviolent, non-punitive, the way of Jesus is like this patient, but insistent non-participation in evil. And that's the resistance. It's just like, I won't participate in this.
Yeah.
No matter what the cost, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd love to speak to that because
go ahead.
My response to this, I mean, was, well, if that's what power is, I'm never going to do that to anyone.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I like pendulum swing the other way, right? Mm. I'm coming out of this, and that's when I met you, Ben. We started doing some training. I was fresh out.
You were on the other side of that at that point.
Yeah, okay. by about 6 months to a year, you know, was invited to do some training and coaching because of some of the things that we were still involved in. But still feeling like, I don't know how to do, I'm just going to be passive. So that was the thing, you know, just be passive.
That's the way I don't hurt anybody is I just won't lead anybody. I just won't sort of do anything. Yeah.
Yes. So the language that we use in Gravity that's really helpful for me is that I just figured like, I'll just be nice more often than I get tough and I'll learn how to manage the outcomes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's tools that not from Gravity, but that are out there that I've used about inviting people in or challenging them to participate. And it's still the same form of power is what I found.
Yeah.
It's still me determining how to manage these people to get them where I need them to be.
Yeah. I'm trying to coerce them or at least just try to like trying to get people to do stuff. It's power that tries to get people to do stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so go ahead, Matt.
Well, I'm just so curious about this, Gino, because I think this is where we typically get to the end of people's experience and imagination for how to relate to others when they're holding authority and power. It's either lowest common denominator, we'll take a vote and we'll go with the majority, or it's I've got this agenda, I've got a plan, and I have to use whatever methods or means that are acceptable to get people on board with this because the ends justifies the means. Not that the means I want to be evil, but you know, sometimes if you're driving a bus, you'll hit some things, you know?
Yeah.
And so if those two things aren't the answer, I have two questions for you and we can tackle them one after the other. One is, what does it look like to use your power of resisting evil for the sake of other people? Mm. So how does this play out? For instance, when you're advocating for justice on behalf of marginalized or minority people or powerless or penniless, et cetera. And then second, that's resisting evil. How do we resist evil without returning evil for evil?
Yeah.
Maybe to put a Bible juke on it.
Yeah, that's good. Those are good questions. I wish I had really formed answers, but I'll tell you what I think initially. We can just process that.
Okay.
I think that they look one and the same. And I think that the response is it's an altogether different kind of power that we use in resistance in most situations. And that's one of love. And love looks like opening space for mutuality, opening space to tend to what God is doing in the world and to name it and then learn together with people. What does this mean for you? How are you responding to this situation? And that's not power over people in many situations, but that is a natural form of resistance to the way power works in the world, because it doesn't just push back against the forces in the sense of we're doing a tug of war kind of thing. It actually says, I'm doing something totally different than playing this tug of war. I'm just opening space for conversation and naming what we're noticing and processing our desires.
Yeah, so I mean, this gets back to our view of God and what we think is going on, right? Because I think there is this profound insecurity that drives the power dynamic that you're describing, that you came out of, the abusive power dynamic, this profound insecurity about God.
Yeah.
That like, if I don't get this right, if I don't grow this church, if I don't get Gino to, you know, get in line, if I don't make this thing happen, like it's all going to fall apart. And there's this in the way of leadership, the, you know, that you're describing, the power of love, mm-hmm. there is a, we have to be confident that God actually is present here, that God yeah. actually is working, and that I'm ready to be surprised by what he might be doing.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
that I don't need to get my way in this situation, because how do I know my way's like God's way? And how would we know what God's way is unless we open up the kind of space where we could discern it together? And so I think it's just, it's a manifestation of a lot more confidence in a God of love who is yes. actually trying to create goodness and flourishing and forgiveness and beauty in our lives. And we if we trust that, then we can open up that kind of space. If we don't trust it, man, we got to go through all kinds of crap to get people to do stuff.
Yes.
You know?
I feel like it might have sounded like I deflected your question, Matt. So I want to speak specifically to engaging injustice and different ways in our neighborhood and what this looks like. Because I was just trying to give a broad brush of like what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Entering in with people and not assuming that I know what resistance looks like. That's what it looks like first. The first is presence and listening. And then advocating for the things that they're desiring that sound like what Jesus would do if he were me in this situation. And so if I do have any kind of agency, it's leveraged for others. Because, but as opposed to, and this is what I'll paint it against, is seeing something that's not right and coming in and trying to fix it without ever having a conversation with someone who's actually affected by what I see that's wrong.
Yeah. You know what? I'm thinking about resisting evil in a non-coercive way, but also non-passively. And do you remember that story from over the summer about the Clark Park in Philly?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And the Proud Boys were going to rally there?
Yes, I do.
Because isn't that a great picture of...
It is.
...resisting evil? Will you tell that story? Because that's in your neighborhood.
Yeah, it's not far from us at all. Yeah.
Yeah, will you tell us that story?
Yeah, so the Proud Boys had organized to have a rally demonstration. I don't know what they call it exactly. A show of force in a very large inner city park. Like within the city, I don't mean any pejorative thing by saying inner city. Within the city at Clark Park, which is in West Philly, not far from us. We have lots of families in our church community that live right near there. We spend time there ourselves. And what word got out on social media that this was happening, West Philly being as West Philly is, everyone just came out and threw a party that families, people from all different backgrounds, ethnically, sexual ethics, all of the, you know, gender identities, everything just having eating food, sharing in games and playing music, to the point where the Proud Boys rally was not even noticed because there were so many other people that in a sense, love swallowed up the words of hate. And they left. They dispersed down to City Hall, which is quite a little ways, and had a tiny little demonstration with the people that were left, and a party broke out instead of a protest.
Yeah, so just to like sum it up, they threw a party in a place that was going to be a protest, a divisive, hate-filled protest. And when the hate showed up, there was no place to protest because there was a party. The party was a prophetic demonstration against the hate-filled protest, but it wasn't fighting hate with hate. It was throwing a party, so there was no room for it.
Now,
this wasn't a Christian idea, right? There was no mega church banner in the park, or you know, the table Philly didn't take credit for it. But these are the kind of scandalously subversive ways of engaging evil that I think is our birthright as Christians.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we need to tell stories and hear stories. Not only the negative stories that you shared today, Gino, but the positive stories of how we can develop an awareness and an imagination for how to do this.
Yeah. That's the unwinding of this form of power. You don't oppose it with a stronger show of force, a louder protest. Well, those are methods that people use, but you do something altogether different. You open up space for love, and that works in such a different way. that it kind of drowns out those other voices.
Hmm. Yes. Maybe as we close, the other question I wanted to ask you is, okay, so coerce, like even like a benign coercion, right? If I don't want to be benignly coercive, and if I also don't want to go passive and let people do what they do and just try to make everybody happy, how do you bear the authority as the pastor of your church? How do you bear that power with and for people in a way that doesn't coerce them? So you get a good idea. You want to do something. You're excited about it. You want to get people on board. How do you lead in a way that doesn't violate people's agency and dignity?
Whew. Yeah, that's another podcast, right?
Altogether. Is there a story or some kind of artifact that maybe could narrate how that it looks different for you now than it would have 15 years ago?
Yeah, I think that the one that we are developing a culture where I'm a participant in the church, not just the pastor. So I don't necessarily have any more weight than anyone else. But in community, I can name things, and that doesn't have to be the directive. I can name a desire, and it can be processed with others. And other people can do the same. So we can listen to one another and make space for what God is doing among us and discern together. We intentionally pursue that because we see that there's a couple of things that we're aiming for. We want to be the kind of people that are formed and shaped to be with people, that especially those that are different than them. And so that takes a kind of spiritual formation to shape people, to know about power dynamics, to understand what they bring into a space. Mm-hmm. And that also subverts this idea of white supremacy having a way to thrive in our church.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's great.
Well, I appreciate you, Gino.
Yeah.
I'm really glad.
Me too, man.
I'm glad you didn't lose your faith. I'm glad you've had a modicum of healing and reckoning from this. Yeah. I'm really grateful that you honored us with your story today that we get to work together.
Yep.
Yes. Thank you, guys. Like, I didn't get to say it, but Matt, if now, when I was in the cohort with you, when I told you guys that you fixed it, I meant like you demonstrated how we don't use power over people, but how living in grace and truth, living in love, is the way to work with our agency. Mm. So I'm grateful for both of you guys and for Hardman and for the opportunity to be with you and share this life in whatever ways we can. So thank you.
Awesome.
How can people connect with you, Gino? Maybe if they are interested in your church or they want to see the other things you're doing, how can they keep up with you?
They can move to Philadelphia because we really believe in presence. No, I'm just, I mean, that is an opportunity. Yeah. We are on all the
that
socials.
That is on the table, yeah.
Yes, we are on all the socials. I don't say that as a recruiting. I say that we really embody. So to know us is to be with us. But in that sense, we do have we're on all the socials, so you can get our info. I'm sure they'll be in the show notes.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Dan. In there. Thanks. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Good to be with you. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator.
Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.